but no one doubts the power. He hits the ball as hard as pretty much almost anyone. And this is, you know, we're talking about someone who's still got years till his athletic prime.
Here we go. It's Hot Sheet on the Baseball America YouTube channel, or you're catching us later on via podcast form. Scott Braun along with Baseball America's JJ Cooper and Jeff Ponce. And since spring training is well underway now, it means prospect profiles. We are hitting the number one prospect per organization on the Baseball America YouTube channel. They're separate videos. You can check them out and then you can just start binge watching. Be like, okay, cool. I got through the Cubs. Let me get to the Cardinals, etc. So go check those out. We've got the NL East up, NL Central, and more on the way. JJ, I want to get right to the first move because I want to spin this forward to what next year could look like with number one prospects.
Me.
2025 is so now, but what about next year, 2026? Who could be the number one prospect? Yeah, exactly. On Baseball America's list, and not just talking per org, but overall, you have to factor in, of course, who is going to graduate and then who is rising.
I would say right now, if you gathered the Baseball America staff together and said, put odds on this, the favorite, maybe even over 50%. Like, again, if you just safe to say with this, if you take the field, you're probably going to do pretty well. But the favorite to be the number one prospect is Texas Ranger shortstop Sebastian Wolcott. You know, there's some nuance to this because obviously you can have a prospect who's great, but if he's going to graduate to the big leagues probably this year, then that doesn't matter for your 2026 number one. But Wolcott has the perfect combination of, he should be at the upper levels of the minors this year, but probably not graduating. He has exceptional tools. He will be very young for the level, very young for the level. And you put it all together with the fact that there's a lot of confidence that Wolcott is already one of the better prospects in the game, but there's a lot of confidence that Wolcott could have kind of a minor league player of the year type season. And really, if you said, who's the number one prospect, how do we pick that? Usually it's a combination of exceptional tools, minor league success, and minor league success at the upper levels of the minors. And that's something that Wolcott checks, could check all those boxes. We'll have to see obviously how he plays this year. Hope he stays healthy, but we'll see. But I think Wolcott right now would be the favorite.
Yeah, and I think when you look at, you know, a player that has super loud tools, obviously some experience in full season ball over the last couple of years, because he did have some time in full season at the end of 2023 after, you know, showing out in the complex, I think Wolcott makes a lot of sense. Personally, for me, and what my suggestion was in this article as to who I think the number one prospect is going to be in 2026 is Jesus Mate. I think you look, we've laid this out on other shows. We had a breakdown. I think it's out on the internet right now. You can check it out on our YouTube page where we broke down why I feel like Mate is so unique. I wrote an article about it. Just from, you know, a combination of things. Number one, we talk about the data. We talk about the underlying numbers. We talk about the in-game performance. But we also have all of the scouting feedback that we've gotten on Mate. You know, Josh Norris obviously was down there in the Dominican Summer League, got to see Mate in person, but also talk with some scouts and some evaluators around the game that have some history with Mate. And I just think that when all of those boxes are getting checked with the data, with the performance, with the pedigree, and then you're also getting the scouting feedback, it's not very often you get scouts, analysts, you know, public numbers analysts, all those guys to agree. For me, I think it's Mate. I think he could come over and have a Jackson Churio type of, you know, jump into a full season level this year, maybe jump a couple of levels. Certainly based on the production, based on the underlying numbers in terms of contact, in terms of swing decisions and approach, and just, you know, what the player is swinging at, that's what we mean when we say swing decisions. And then the EVs that are outlier for a player like that, plus he's a guy that's going to stick in the infield. I just think that, you know, despite him not having that full season level experience that, of course, you know, gives Wolcott right now the leg up, I think he can get that very quickly. And I think the underlying skills, the bat to ball skills, the swing decisions, I think at the same age, he's well beyond what Wolcott was. He's not as toolsy. He's not as twitchy as Wolcott. But I do think the overall package for me with Mate, I think that's the guy, for me at least, that I believe is going to be the number one prospect in 2026.
Both Mate and Wolcott fit that. They're going to be the youngest guys pretty much in the league they play in. But at the same time, what I would say is if I wanted to say another one who could be a little bit more conventional, I would say is Walker Jenkins, who the Twins outfielder was one of the top, the top picks in the draft just a couple of years ago. And the thing that stands out with Jenkins to me is I don't feel like we've seen with Walker Jenkins yet what we're going to see. Doesn't mean he's been bad. Doesn't mean he hasn't been really productive. But there's been some injuries. There really hasn't been kind of that season where you go, that's what we're going to see from Walker Jenkins. He's still very young, so I don't want to make it sound like, this is a 27-year-old or anything who's been struggling. But I would say that when you look at Jenkins, I wouldn't be surprised at all if he had a season this year where he basically sits there, as one of the top batting averages in the minors, shows one of the better on base percentages in the minors, and shows some more power than he's shown before. If he does that, wouldn't be surprised at all if he got like a late season call up to the majors even, but not enough to graduate where he could end up being a number one prospect as well.
Okay. I want to continue this conversation in just a moment. So let's take a quick flash right to a break. Thank you, sponsor. And then we'll come back and keep talking about next year's potential number one overall prospect. Oh, Todd, Father, remember the good old days when we would have the cards in the binders, but then they'd get all messed up and we're trying to sell online and it's just real clunky. They really actually weren't the good old days, were they?
No, they were definitely not. But now there's a better way. The Arena Club has been dominant with this. You get to trade your cards. You could sell them. But the best part for me is getting them graded. I love everything about that, this new age of getting cards graded. You could display them on your online showroom, your mobile device. It's the coolest thing in the world.
Whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the all-in-one trading card platform. You have to sign up for an account at arenaclub.com/foul. Just like Todd Father mentioned, there's a process that combines AI and human grading to get the job done. Right now, 20% off your first slab pack or card purchase by going to arenaclub.com/foul. Use code foul. That's arenaclub.com/foul, code foul for 20% off your first purchase. All right, let's keep talking about who could be the number one overall prospect in baseball, according to Baseball America, in 2026. Jeff, what about Leo DeVries, shortstop, Padres prospect, still super young? Does he have the potential to pass anyone else we've talked about so far?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think you look at, he was in the same class as Mate on the international market, obviously was good enough, and the Padres felt he was good enough to completely jump complex ball together, not only the Dominican Summer League, but the domestic complex leagues as well. Went to a full season level, struggled over the first couple of months. I think we've broken down those numbers before in the show. July 1st hit, and it seemed like, he flipped the switch. And it just seemed like at that point, the at-bats got better. In-game power started to show up. Unfortunately, on that great run, toward the end of the season, he had an injury, was then shut down, missed the last month plus, came back in the AFL, which for a player his age is very, very unusual. Another guy that's in the infield, has a variety of skills, is tooled up as well, maybe a little bit more in that Mate range as opposed to like just this outlier off the charts sort of athlete like Sebastian Walcott. But I think when we talk about, for me at least, the players that have the underlying skills, the pedigree, and the production behind it, it's Walcott, it's Mate, and it's DeVries. And, the other part of this too is we look at AJ Preller's track record with young players in the international market, young players, particularly high school players in the draft. He's hit a lot of homers. I mean, over and over and over again, his scouting department has done a great job, and I think it's one of the great strengths of the Padres, is identifying these amateur players with massive upside. Some of them have been traded away. James Wood is obviously one of those players that was number one overall prospect for us for a very small window last year before he came up and graduated. I do think that DeVries is another name there that you absolutely have to consider when you're talking about this group.
I'll throw out one that's a little bit further off, off of our top 10, our top 25, but I could make a case for. And a lot of fans, got bad news for you because the Dodgers have our number one prospect right now in Roky Sasaki. And I get a sense that there might be some people out there who do seem annoyed by the Dodgers' success. Get a little bit of that feedback on social media. But Zahir Hope, who was one of the players who the Dodgers acquired in last year's Michael Busch trade, he kind of had a loss 2024 because of injuries. But when you talk about the power, when you talk about the plate discipline, if you said who's someone who's a little bit further afield who could kind of leap up the list to number one, Jeff, when I look at him, I think all the ingredients are there, even though I would acknowledge that if all of the guys we just listed all had breakout seasons this year, all had great seasons this year, Hope's not going to win because he doesn't have the defensive value of the profile, and he's not as young for the level as some of these other guys we talked about. But if you said Zahir Hope goes out and hits, you know, leads the minors and homers while playing at multiple levels, there could be a case for him to be number one, isn't there?
Yeah, I think absolutely. He's another guy that really early in the season last year, just digging through some of the, you know, underlying minor league data, the stuff that we're fortunate enough through sources to get access to, he was a guy that popped like first month, just in terms of the contact, the end zone contact. There's not a lot of end zone whiff, really good swing decisions, and it's outlier power. I mean, the 90th percentile EVs he put up throughout the season. He was injured for a good chunk of it, but came back and still produced those numbers. We saw him hit an absolute monster shot. I think we probably have some video of that where he hit it over the batter's eye. Forgetting what the park is up there in the north. It's not a surprise. It's the other one. But just like outlier power, super loud tools, really good athlete. As you said, like he's probably not going to be a center fielder. It's probably more of a corner outfield profile. But that being said, it compares very favorably to Roman Anthony, who Roki Sasaki came in and stole the thunder. But Roman Anthony is still, you know, the best prospect or the highest rated positional prospect we have, but also the highest rated positional prospect we have that actually has played in North America with an affiliated team. So I'm putting some labels on that in terms of why it works or not. But I do think that it's very similar, obviously a different body type. He's much smaller than Anthony is, but still sort of packs the same wallop. And I think that makes him just an outlier prospect and somebody that, you know, I wish we got him even a little bit higher on our top 100 list, if I'm going to be honest. I'm a big Hope fan. I believe in Hope.
And that was at Camelback Ranch, that smash.
No, it wasn't Camelback.
No?
It was wherever the Guardians play. I'm just totally drawing a blank right now.
Goodyear.
Goodyear. There you go. I knew it started with a G. Glendale, Goodyear. It's near surprise. But yeah, Goodyear. Like massive batter's eye in center field and hit it clear over it. It was like a 470-foot shot. It was one of the furthest homers I've ever seen.
Okay, then I have to ask the obvious question because teams get so protective of prospects. Cubs fans might be listening right now. Like, how the hell did this guy end up on the Dodgers?
I will start with two things. One, you do sometimes have to give up talent to get talent. Michael Busch was quite good for the Cubs last year, and they got a plug-and-play big league starter who looks to be there, you know, looks to be a starter for them for years to come. So even if Hope is good, it's not like, oh, they got that for a reliever who they rented for an hour and a half. This is a plug and play. You're going to play with, you know, watch Bush play for the Cubs for years to come. So that's one. But the second part is this kind of goes back to the danger of trading a guy like Hope. Hope is a guy who it's high risk, high reward. The Dodgers kind of, Jackson Ferris, the other guy that they got in this trade, kind of fits that too. The Dodgers can take a little bit more risk on some of these because if one doesn't pan out, they've got another 10 of these, gambles that they're taking. And they're also really good at development. So, you know, when I look at it, Jeff, the thing that stands out is it was the combination of tools that Hope had get him into that Dodgers development, and it's a great combo.
Yeah, I think that's perfectly put. And the Dodgers just do a really good job of scouting other teams' farm systems too. A couple of years ago, you know, they got, I know he hasn't totally worked out, but Nick Frosso was a guy that they pretty much stole from the Blue Jays. You go back and you look at that trade, it was more or less for a reliever, not a major piece that the Blue Jays got back, just trying to reinforce their bullpen. And they get this arm that at that time, now he's dealt with some injuries since then, but was really trending up as soon as he got into that Dodgers organization and was somebody that was being mentioned as a top 100 prospect. They just do a really good job of scouting other teams' farm systems. And I'm sure that there were some folks within the Cubs scouting department that were like, we don't want to trade Hope. We don't want to attach this guy. And the Dodgers probably, you know, held steadfast and they got the two guys that they wanted. And now we look back in a year later and, you know, Bush has been a nice piece for the Cubs, a piece going forward, somebody they're going to have control of into his 30s. And the Dodgers on the other side added two top 100 prospects in Jackson Ferris and Dyer Hope. I just don't think at the time we expected Hope to sort of leapfrog over Ferris.
Okay, so now what I want to do is jump to our final segment, but give it some time here. So let's hit the final sprint. Spring training games are happening. Spring training action is here. So we get fresh information on players and prospects. But JJ, let's go over spring training overreactions. Just like we have at the beginning of the season where we get really excited about a team or a player, we can do that in spring training with prospects who are mixed in with big leaguers and you get to see how they're faring against them. Let's start with Rays outfielder Chandler Simpson. What have you seen from him so far?
Well, you could start with he's 3-for-4, so he's batting .750. He's already stolen a base, but those are the things we kind of know. Like, I'll also point out he's yet to swing and miss. And talking, you know, to people with the Rays, are like, oh, in the inner squads and all here, he's also in our, like, in everything you see, he's basically almost impossible to sneak a pitch by. If he swings, he's generally going to make contact. But that's all things that kind of was true last year, too. I mean, this guy stole over 100 bags last year. He is as fast as anyone. The thing he did, though, and the thing that stands out as you're watching this on this catch, if he's this kind of defender, which has been kind of the question with Chandler, he was an infielder all through college, just moved to the outfield as a pro, and despite having 80 speed, he hasn't always been a plus defender in center field. But if this guy, and he made not just that catch, he also made a really nice catch against Christian Campbell. If he can make those kind of plays in center field, if he can be a plus defender, then really watch out, because I have very little concern about the hitting tool. And we know that his speed is exceptional. By the way, he also has an infield single where he went 3-9 home to first and it's like two steps to the left of the third baseman and it still was enough for him to beat it out. That's the kind of player he is.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what we've seen over and over again over the last couple of years is players that have that sort of 80 speed, which he does, or at least 70 speed, they can make a position switch into the outfield and be successful with it. Jaron Duran, it took a little bit of time for Jaron Duran to get his sea legs under him in the outfield. But since then, he's become a very serviceable outfielder, potentially their starting center fielder this year. And I think if you just saw what he was 2-3 years ago in the outfield versus what he was last year, there was massive leaps. He's really fast. Chandler Simpson is much faster than Jaron Duran. I'm sure would probably beat him in a race by a few legs. It would be like, you know, catching the freeze. I think when you have that sort of outlier speed, it really does translate to so much of what you have to do in the outfield in terms of going and getting it. And then it's just a matter of, you know, sort of refining it, making sure that just like with hitting, you know, the more you see pitches, the more you see breaking balls of a certain quality, changeups of a certain quality, the easier it's going to be to identify those pitches. It's the same thing. It's just a matter of seeing how the ball comes off the bat, having enough experience to say, okay, I'm going to have to jump this way, jump that way, that he's somebody. There's other players, like, you know, Trey Morgan's one who is super athletic, a great first baseman. I don't know if I have the same confidence that he's ever going to be a great corner outfielder just because he doesn't have that crazy makeup speed. And it makes a big difference. You can run bad routes if you have 80 makeup speed. I mean, we see it with receivers in the NFL. You don't have to be the crispest route runner if you're a guy that can just run by everybody and go get the ball. And I think that's what we're starting to see with Simpson. The fact that the Rays have the confidence to put him out there and he's making the plays that he's making, I think is really exciting if you're a Chandler Simpson fan, like I know my man JJ is, or if you're a Rays fan. You know, there's never going to be a lot of power here, but if he can get on base, hit for a high average, you know, hit it where they ain't and steal bags. I don't know if he's going to steal 100. I don't know if this is going to be the rebirth of Ricky Henderson, Vince Coleman type of stolen base numbers. He could be a better version of Billy Hamilton because I think the hit tool is much better than Billy Hamilton's ever was. I don't think I'm going out on a ledge or out on a limb here saying that, but I think it's really, really interesting.
I'm a fan of variety. He is something that we don't get to see much of, if at all, in baseball these days. So I'm a fan. You know, I like Ellie De La Cruz. I like Luis Arraez. Chandler Simpson brings something different. And for me as a fan, that's really fun. So I'm rooting for his success.
Can I also note, He also pulled a fastball 100 miles an hour for a line drive single. The thing that you often see with the Billy Hamiltons of the world is they can't handle velo. They can't pull the ball. Chandler Simpson can get that bat head out. And if you want to bust him inside, he'll pull it down the line for a double. If you want to go away, he'll slap it in the ground for a single.
Also, his singles are pretty much doubles in most cases. So that is a big edge. That's an extra base hit. It just comes up in a creative way. Okay, let's get to some pitchers on overreaction, or maybe we're reacting accurately. Let's start with Zebby Matthews, a little velo pump right now for the Twins pitcher slash prospect. What are you seeing, JJ?
So I don't want, again, this is an overreaction off of one start and a short stint and all that. But that being said, Zebby Matthews threw five fastballs in his first appearance that were harder than any fastball he threw in the major leagues last year. Getting to 97, 97 and a half. And I bring that up because Zebby Matthews has always had control. He's always had command. But in the big leagues, the thing we saw a little bit was, is this stuff good enough to really kind of get the outs you want to be getting, you know, that he needs to be getting? And if he can maintain that, and I don't mean sit 97 with every fastball he throws, but if that's kind of more in his back pocket when he needs it, that would be a big difference for him. And I do think that that's kind of one that's definitely worth kind of filing away. Let's see what the rest of spring training looks like. But that was a very encouraging first sign, because if he's got that kind of velocity, I don't see how you keep him out of the rotation, the Twins rotation, at least in the short to medium, maybe medium term. They may have enough depth where they hold him back for a few weeks, but I can't imagine he won't be in that rotation for most of the year if he's sitting at that 96, 97 range.
Yeah, I think you consider like his command as well, which we know has been pretty outlier, you know, throughout his time in the minor leagues. I think, you know, he definitely, when I take a look at the back end of that rotation, you know, Chris Paddock, who knows what he's going to show up and be from week to week. You know, Simeon Woods Richardson was a nice development for them last year. But I think there's certainly an opportunity, considering Matthews is already in the 40-man roster. He could certainly come out, dominate in spring training, and pitch himself into one of those positions in the fourth or fifth starter role. And those other guys can maybe slide down, whether it's to AAA, whether it's to a long relief role, you know, or maybe even as like a sixth starter. You know, teams seem to be tinkering with the idea of going to six-man rotations more frequently now than they had in previous years. I think he's a pretty exciting one. It'll be interesting to see, you know, how that all sort of plays out. But one name that I want to actually call out is Jackson Jobe, who I think we're going to get a first look at tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken. I'm really excited to tune into this as long as it's broadcast, because I had a few starts I wanted to watch today, like the Dolander start, where he did pitch pretty well over two innings, gave up a home run, but was up to like 97, 98. I think had three strikeouts over two innings. I want to see what this new sinker and what this new power curveball is going to look like for Jobe. He's already got a deep arsenal of pitches. The pitch mix getting deeper with more power, with more direction and spin and just nasty movement. If he's able to kind of hone all this and use it in certain, you know, split focus sort of situational moments, I think there's definitely a chance that this guy could have a, I don't know if it's going to be a Paul Skeens type of year, but could have a really loud rookie season as he busts his way into the major leagues.
I'm going to bring up one more guy with velocity, because again, I want to overreact a little bit here, because Jack Leiter was sitting 98, 99. He didn't throw a four-seam fastball under 98 in his first outing. Again, short start. Don't want to go overboard on it. But the main thing that jumps out here is this is a guy who, when he's 98, 99 with his fastball, major league hitters hit 167, 200, 222. When he's under 97, they hit 390, 493, 745. And you may think, oh, you're just kind of moving the barriers around here. No, 97-mile-an-hour fastballs, they hit 318, 407, 591. And the same thing is true in the minors as well. This is Jack Leiter can get swings and misses, can succeed with his fastball when it's 98-plus. If it dips below that, hitters usually tee off. So that's one to watch. And I don't want to forget about Jack Caglione, the Royals' first-round pick from last year, who hit 115-mile-an-hour home run yesterday, which is as hard as all but one ball that the Royals hit all of 2024. So there's some big power there. We knew that in college at Florida. He's already showing it in the big leagues in spring training as well. So that's one that definitely is worth kind of highlighting, because if Jack kind of puts it all together, we want to see him continue to improve as far as the swing and miss. but no one doubts the power. He hits the ball as hard as pretty much almost anyone. And this is, you know, we're talking about someone who's still got years till his athletic prime. So I can't even imagine how hard a 26 or 27 year old Jack may be hitting the ball.
That's right. That's right. It's a strong man, which we knew from college ball, but it's converting at least early on here. We don't want to overreact, but we do want to report what we're seeing here. That's important. That's what we're here for. We do this every week, by the way. Okay, let's also bring in something we like to do as often as possible, which is answer fan questions, especially when you're with us live. So great username. I'm a Family Guy fan. So Stewie Griffin asks, just joined, thoughts on Susanna pitch or touching 103 in February. Could he push for 106? Control seemed a bit all over, but we knew that Chandler Simpson's defense seems to have made a jump. So you want to comment on Susanna for the Nats, JJ?
Yeah, so I would say the thing that we see now that has changed used to be that pitchers just weren't close to their velo when they came into spring training. Nowadays, a lot of pitchers kind of come in at pretty, you know, they've spent an offseason working out. They've spent an offseason hitting the gym, getting the legs really in shape to where we saw 102. Like, that's not far beyond what we saw from Susanna last year. But I don't know if because he's doing that in February, that means we're going to see 106 down the road, because we've seen 102, 100. Like, this is not outside of a range of Susanna's velo generally. But the other thing I'll say is his control did get a lot better. You know, Jeff, you've kind of done a lot of work on this with Susanna. That's the thing I would say is that I'm encouraged with Harlan Susanna is felt like he really did kind of turn a corner last year, the second half of the season, that there's more reason to believe that maybe he could be a starter, not just, you know, a future reliever who just rears back and throws the ball really hard.
Yeah. And I think the fact that he's as young as he is at 20 years old, you know, big body, like a starter, a lot of those sort of traits that you look for with starters. And the fact that, you know, he did take a very big jump in terms of, you know, his control and command a year ago. You know, just sort of looking at the numbers, like overall on the season last year, you know, a 10.8% walk rate is pretty good when you consider it's a 35.4% strikeout rate. You know, the fact that, you know, he did pitch 103.2 innings in his age 20 season. He'll be turning 21 within a couple of weeks here, just at the end of March. So it will be his age 21 season, but still super young. Has stayed fairly healthy. Has shown that he can not only handle innings, but handle that velocity and hold that velocity throughout his starts. I think he had the highest average fastball velocity last year among pitchers that threw 80 or more innings. It was just about 100 miles an hour. So, like, I don't know if he can hit 106. Like, if I had to place a bet on somebody doing it besides Ben Joyce in the, you know, that's technically a prospect or under 50 innings, I probably would place my bets on Susanna, because he just sits 100 and it's pretty easy. And the fact that he can get it up to 103, you know, to see him maybe hit 104, 105, or potentially 106 at one point in time wouldn't be. It would be crazy, but it wouldn't be completely shocking just based on his track record, as young as he is, as big as he is. But I don't know if he needs to hit 106. I want him to stay healthy. He could sit 100 miles an hour, touch 102, touch 103. That still gets me excited. I don't see 103 very often.
I'm going to pick it up. If I had to pick a guy in the minors, a prospect-eligible pitcher to throw 106, it's Renato Yin with the Dodgers. He's already gotten 105. You know, like Edgardo Henriquez throws 103. And it's like, oh, so you're the soft tosser of the Dodgers, you know, minor league pitchers, because, you know, we have seen 105. So one more mile an hour, I think that's got, you know, he'd be my odds on favorite, but Susanna would definitely be in that top five.
There you go. If you're looking for just straight velocity, okay, this is the conversation for you. We can dive into this. It's a good segment at some point. Some people obviously are just enamored by the radar gun.
And the hardest throwers.
And the hardest throwers. Hey, Ben Joyce, I'm pretty sure, told us at one point, like, that was one of his missions, is to throw harder than anyone else on the planet, or at least in a major league game. And good for him. So far, so good, right?
And that's where Aroldis Chapman, the fact that he's been doing it for 15 plus seasons, is remarkable, because generally That's a high attrition game, but you know, Rollo Chapman just does it year after year after year.
Yeah. Can you do that and keep the arm in the socket for a long period of time? We have seen Chapman do that. He's a workout monster too. He's a big dude. All right. This was fun. Reminder, if you want to learn more about top prospects per organization, that is happening for you right now on the Baseball America YouTube channel. You can catch many of them already out and many more to follow. We'll hit every single team, all 30, the top prospect. We get into some other things within those teams as well. We'll see you next week for Hot Sheet.